I'm Lewis Ludlow, and you're listening to Cherry Jam.
Hello, and welcome to Episode 7, Series 5 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, James Eastwood, also known as Stowie, and Jim Harley. I think it's your first appearance this season, Snowy.
Feels like my first in ages.
Yeah, well, you are one of these people that does lots of stuff and involve yourself by, you know, nearly dying in a storm in Cork. And
one of these people that does lots of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, annoying now, fitness.
That's
stuff.
What I put on my gravestone.
He did stuff, yes. And obviously, just to sort of give an idea what the other guys are up to, Loz is in full recovery mode because he's got man flu, self-admitted man flu. And as he's driving over to France on Thursday, he thought it best to get an early night. And Russ has been drinking 2 days straight, so no in a million years he was going to be on tonight. So we are going to talk about France another time. I've got a lot of audio we recorded from our first weekend in Lille, some of which is usable, most of which isn't. And we will try and I'll try and get that as a special pod at some point in the next couple of weeks, just as a entertaining amuse-bouche, shall we say, because it is taking a long time to go through the usable stuff.
Did you get some lessons for next weekend's trip?
Very much so. Yeah, don't record when we're 4 or 5 pints or in.
You won't have anything then. I think I was 4 or 5 pints in before we got to the Channel Tunnel last time.
Well, true. Yeah, three bottles of wine by the time we got to Dunkirk. So that was impressive.
Not the driver.
None for me. Might add, none for me. I was a very good boy. Anyway,
I think we need to better that. On Thursday, I reckon we could easily do 4.
Well, Loz is driving, so yeah, we could definitely do 4 because he savors it. We just drink it.
Tonga is 70 kilos heavier in the pack than South Africa.
That's just one player, though, isn't it? Let's be fair.
He is a big unit, isn't he?
Is it Tamar Fayer? I think it's how you pronounce it. So
yeah, just for the listeners, this is great because I'm a good 90 seconds ahead of Ed.
Yeah,
on my feed for the rugby, and I think I'm about 2 seconds ahead of Snowy. So this is it's going to be good.
Yeah, we're kind of watching the Tonga South Africa game on in the background because of course this is going to be the biggest upset in World Cup history. It's not. Let's be fair, South Africa are going to thump them. Anyway, we will be talking about this week. We talk about some of the World Cup over the last couple of weeks, just more generally, plus the 2 Gloucester games this weekend. Obviously, Snowy couldn't see either of those because he lives in the north and neither of them are televised. But Jim, we'll start just quickly chatting about Hartbury. We went to watch the Gloucester Hartbury game on Friday night and it was quite torturous, I thought. It wasn't the most exciting game of rugby. Gloucester won comfortably with a bonus point, which puts us pretty much there.
Yeah, I mean, we went down. We were losing to start with, weren't we? Hartbury certainly started the quicker and put us under a little bit of pressure. But, it was a bit clunky. I think we're kind of in that awkwardness about every time we take to the field, it's a different 15 and everyone's just takes a little bit of time to get used to their positions. I know we'll come on to what's going to happen over the next couple of weeks, maybe a bit later in the pod, but I think it definitely shows when we're sort of mixing up the squad as much as we are, which is giving everyone game time, which is great. I think it was a good opportunity for some of the youngsters actually, and at the same time it was a great opportunity for Hartbury. It was pretty much a first 15 for Hartbury, I think, and they clearly sort of they're going to benefit from playing against, albeit not the best squad we could possibly field, but I think they benefit from playing a game of that standard. Hopefully that'll sort them out when their season starts proper.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because we'll kind of come on to this in a bit, but we've lost another team in the last week. Jersey have gone pop. For Hartbury, it's a great opportunity. So it was 2,000, I think they said there was 2,100 or something like that, which is near enough a sellout, probably one of their biggest ever crowds. And you know, it was a nice atmosphere. There's lots of people from the local area, you know, the little villages around that I grew up there. It was nice to see lots of people like that out and about. And it was we definitely first 25, 30 minutes, their game plan was to basically kick it to us and make us do something. And as you said, brand new 15, we're not used to, you know, the partnerships and things like that weren't there, and we kept making a lot of silly errors, lots of handling errors. I mean, I think Russ made the point about Llewellyn and Atkinson at centre. And I do think there's definitely something there to be built on. But if I'm honest, in the games I've seen Gloucester so far this season, the Seb Atkinson looks... he looks a much more in form and much more probably a player we want to be starting with. You know, that was only Mark Atkinson's first game since last year, so...
It was great to see him just take to the field, not be shy of contact, collision. No. You know, and he obviously came through. I think he was subbed off with, 10-15 minutes to go, was it, towards the end?
Yeah.
So he put in a cracking performance, almost as impressive as his denim outfit that he was wearing in the shed on Saturday.
I did hear about this. So we'll just sort of round off on the hype again, because it is very difficult to judge, because it was a very, very much a, I would even say, a C team for Gloucester. We had a lot of young players out, more than enough to beat Hartbury side. But then obviously on Saturday with the Barbars, and again, first chance we saw of Zach Mercer, who I thought was superb.
Yeah. Oh God. I mean, literally, it reminds me of, you know, your Garvey, your Django, your Simpson Daniel sort of era, when a player gets the ball and everyone's just expecting some brilliance, because he had proper dancing feet. Making half breaks, you know, and I think when the players around him kind of have played a few more games around him, he will be putting in some beautiful offloads for people to be running onto. And, you know, you could tell he was looking for, you know, he was looking for a weak shoulder or, you know, a gap just constantly every single time he touched the ball. So really, really exciting prospect.
Yeah, made yards every single time as well, didn't he? I mean, that was the thing. That's the thing instantly you notice. Every time he got the ball, he was making 2, 3, 4, 5 yards over the game line, taking 2, 3 players in. If we can get quick ball off the back of that, just off that, that's going to be a massive improvement.
We did seem to have a lot of quick ball. Both games, the scrum halves seem to have just pushed the pace a little bit. I hope that continues, because... clearly, you know, defences are so good these days. The only real way to break them down is multi-phase, quick phase play. So,
Just a few things, and we'll sort of leave the chat about the Gloucester games this weekend, because, as I say, the other aspect is the Barbars team was a lot weaker than probably we were hoping for. We'll talk more about the issues around why we couldn't fill the crowd out and other things that are around that, which Snowy can assist with. But just on a few other things I thought was impressive, I thought, Seb Atkins had a great game. Zach Mercer had a good game. It's great to see the likes of Kirill, Jack Singleton, Santi Cicino was back again over the weekend. You know, all these players, Ackerman, all these players now coming back into fitness, which... it's massive, because we're pretty much going into the season with a fully fit squad, which it is lovely. And I think more than anything else, the style of play seems to have really stepped up as well. We're not reliant on that box kick and the rolling ball, although we did score a couple of rolling ball tries. But, you know, we're trying stuff on set piece. But
yeah, we're definitely trying to put the ball through hands. We're definitely trying to run a little bit more. And as you were saying, Ed, there is absolutely no way at the end of last season, or, you know, most of last season, to be fair, we could have got close to being able to play on a Friday and a Saturday. We just did not have enough players.
Yeah.
Um, And I think kind of when you're looking at the players that we've now got available, you suddenly realise how many quality players we did have out last season, you know, just at centre and hooker as, you know, two key positions.
Yeah, exactly. We'll move on to now on the Barbars game and sort of the disappointing side of things. And so I'll bring you in now, mate, because obviously you weren't able to attend because, you know, you're miles away. But we only, I think there's probably only about 5,000 people there on Saturday. And I always think it's telling that the other than obviously the grandstand, there were a number of people, but it wasn't a huge crowd. But it was always telling that when the tump end is pretty full, that normally tells you everything you needed about the ticket pricing.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, any Barbarians game is just a bit of a moneymaker on the side, really. So mm-hmm. I think if you include it in the season ticket, it probably costs you more than you make from it.
Yeah.
So I understood why it wasn't in the ticket pricing. I think where they screwed up a bit was with the numbers, because I saw some people complaining that it was a disgrace that there was such a small crowd for it. It's like, come on, there wasn't a single player I'd ever heard of in the Barbarian side.
I heard of Inaki in centre. I heard of one player. I mean, as you know, I was Googling on Friday who the bloody everyone was.
Where it didn't really work is it there wasn't an England game or even a really good game to follow it in the World Cup, because what you get then is a lot of people make a day of it, and it's like, right, we'll go to the rugby. We don't really care much about the result because it's a Gloucester side, so it's good to see a few guys have a run out, but we don't know any of the opposition. And then we have go to the pub, make a day of it, and watch the England game or watch a big game in the World Cup. So I think that definitely reduces the numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an earner for the club. 5,000 people paying tickets at those prices is a nice bit of extra money, and I wouldn't expect the crowd to be big for a game against a load of players you've never heard of. So, yeah, I'm not very emotional about it, really.
No, I think more from my point of view, I felt that club, they were let down a bit, I think, also by the Barbarians.
But I mean, I bet when they booked it, they weren't expecting it. It's the Barbarians anyway isn't like what it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
I mean is not
they had a fixture the day before, didn't they?
Well, they fixed the same day.
Same day.
Like an hour. That's the issue. I don't have a problem with the team they pick, because they're the players that are available. You know, let's be honest, these are the players that Eddie Jones didn't pick, and a few Japanese guys. That's fine. I'm not worried about the team that Barbar's picked. It's more the fact that I don't think it's done much for the Barbarians brand that you've got two games on the same day, both of which were fairly average squads, where if the Barbarians had been a bit sensible about it, you know, they could have spread it over a couple of weekends and had a really good squad, which would maybe have attracted a few more people. But yeah,
quite a few other games, haven't they? They're playing, or have they already played Bristol?
They played Bristol. They played Leicester or Quinn.
Northampton as well,
Charlotte,
maybe, is it?
Yeah, Northampton, Scarlet.
Yeah, so I think what they do now, they are a business, aren't they? And they're like, right, if you want to play us, brilliant. Pay us this money and we'll put together a squad.
It's a mechanism to give players games as well, isn't it, in this period? I mean, it's no surprise the World Cup's on and suddenly the Barbarians are playing fixtures left, right and centre.
Yeah, of course. And also that I think the other thing that I think they let down really was the lack of social media and lack of advertising by the Barbars. That's the other side of things.
Their website is dog shit.
Yeah, it's really poor. And we've commented before about the Barbarians' Twitter is one of the best rugby Twitters out there, particularly during game time. Really good laugh, in the spirit of everything. And it just felt very, very sort of mediocre. Now, I can only imagine that the people involved may be in France as part of other socials or, you know, things like that. But it's just basic stuff. You'd hope that something as well known as the Barbars will be a little bit more slicker. That's all. I don't know. Maybe we're overthinking it.
How it's all run, sort of in commercial terms and stuff. I mean, really, it's like any made up 15 now is just a Barbarians team, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yes.
Yeah, I mean, but you can't call yourself Barbarians because that is copyrighted.
Yeah. But there's no like, in the early days, it was like, we are making a dream 15.
Yes.
That's not the, that's just not what it is anymore.
No, no. I mean, one thing I did think as well is obviously the club have got to make a decision very early on about when do they play this game. Now, they worked on the basis that I suppose they didn't necessarily know what the Prem Cup was going to be in terms of format when they booked the Bar Bars. That wasn't, I'm pretty sure wasn't, hasn't been confirmed. So you don't know the weekends, et cetera, in terms of what's people's availability, what's the budget people are going to have. Could we have gone, well, could we not do it at the end of the season? But then equally, you've got the issue about, well, hopefully Gloucester are going to be in positions where they might have a lot of other games around the end of the season.
I think timing-wise, I think it was perfect. I think the way it fell into the pre-season kind of that we're using, because we didn't have a pre-season games, we use the cup as our pre-season game before the Premiership starts, and I think it fell into that really, really nicely. And like I said before, you know, we've got a squad that was able to field those two sides, one on Friday night, one on the Saturday. So as it fell into that, that was perfect. I think doing a Bar Bars game at the end of a very long season, you just we could have ended up not having any decent fit players, and you still get a Bar Bars side that's not particularly great, and then they end up winning. You know, at least we won the game.
It's just a laugh and an opportunity to give players a run out, isn't it? And I mean, it used to be an honour to get picked for the Barbarians, but now you get picked for the Barbarians if you didn't get picked for Australia, which is just embarrassing.
I think if we were Australian, side, we might have had a chance.
Well, yeah, we did. I do think so. Just a quick aside, though, as well, that they did announce the Hall of Fame. Now, again, not criticism of Gloucester as such, but I just think to myself, there's little things when you're sort of organising these things, and it's great to see kids on the pitch at half time doing a bit of tag rugby. But
from Newbury.
Yeah, I just think to myself, right, what would have been better? Having the Hall of Fame selectees or inductees in front of the shed or in front, right in the middle of the grandstand, so everyone can see them, or they could do a little lap of the field, all this sort of stuff.
They probably didn't bring the correct footwear to be able to go onto the pitch, Ed, so that's simply not possible.
Do you know what? It's this sort of things.
I've got a question about this. Going to retire the numbers 1 through to 15?
Yes.
I know Malcolm Vickery has asked the question, Ed, how our vote compared. Did you actually write down what our vote was? Because I have no clue what we decided on.
Good. I did. And funny enough, I was going to go back to Malcolm, but actually it's probably easier to do on here. So I had a look earlier. I think we got 2 wrong.
Well, no, we didn't get 2 wrong.
Oh, right.
The club got 2 wrong.
The 2 that we... we said Rob Fidler at 4, and I think they said Alex Brown. Well, Alex Brown got it, which I think we at the time it was quite a 50-50 on that
and
one.
And I think that one, I think is fair that it, as I spoke to people at the ground about, I think it's just because the voting demographic is far younger and probably doesn't even remember or ever have watched FIDS play.
Yeah. There's always going to be a slant against more modern players, isn't there?
Yeah, I genuinely was very pleased that Dave Sims got his spot. And I thought it was very nice and a lovely touch to have Dave Sims' wife and son along.
I mean, it was brilliant, the fact that so many people came to pick up awards and stuff.
And then the other one which we got, I was really surprised actually, because then equally, you know, it's a very difficult decision. So 13, the Hall of Fame inductee was Mike Tindall, but we said Tarry Fanalua.
And I think it's that modern player, and to be fair, Tindall is still very he's very front and center, isn't he, with a lot of his social media presence and stuff.
And he was probably actually better than Tarry Fanalua.
I mean
even if you adjust for era, but I think the thing that puts us off Tindall a bit is we know that he spent half of his career at Bath.
Well, he didn't really. No. Not quite half.
He ended up quite a long. Yeah, yeah.
And
he
I'm thinking he wasn't there to pick up his award.
The best part of his career, arguably.
Yeah, he wasn't there to pick up his award. Is that because he was playing for Minch? I don't know.
No, it's because he was in France.
Is he having a jolly with the good, bad, and the ugly?
He's on the GBR boys. So Billy 12 Trees obviously was part of the Ealing squad, so he couldn't pick it up. And then then Mike Tindall wasn't there. I think the only other player who wasn't able to attend was Gandhi Gummersall, and that was something to do with he fell off a scooter. That was what was announced over the tannoy.
Very good. I did see a great photo of Ludo and Vickery and someone else who I forget. And it was basically, the question was, which one's the retired front row? Django Vicks and Ludo.
Yeah, Vicks has lost a lot of weight, hasn't he? Slim.
And yeah, if you were asked as a total like rugby, know nothing, which one of these guys is the ex fly half, French ex fly half that is, and Phil looks like he's been, living under a sunbed for the last sort of 6 months, and Ludo looks like he's been eating pies for the last 6 months. I mean, I think it's great that they all came down. I think it's really, really good that they still have that kind of that love for Gloucester that they came down, and they're clearly loving seeing each other again. Just really happy to catch up with old teammates. And I know a lot of the guys that wanted to come for the Powergen reunion didn't end up coming because of date changes and such. So obviously this date was set in stone, and they've all made a bit of an effort to come along, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, it's genuinely lovely to see some of these guys. It's a crazy thing, it's 20 years ago, isn't it? I mean, we were saying this the other day about how quickly time passes, but, I felt a bit sad. That was one thing I did feel a little bit sad for, the fact that the crowd wasn't big enough. I almost thought, would it have been better, based on the fact that probably club knew pretty early on that the crowd was not going to be sizable.
Yeah.
Could we not have moved this to the Quins game?
Yeah.
And done it then, where you get a massive group of, you'd have had the chance going up and all the rest of it. Whereas the Barbars game, there's a lot of people who don't know these players.
Yeah, that there were actually, it was quite nice to see. I mean, obviously I said about the, there was quite a lot of, couple of coach worths of kids that were doing all the stuff at half time. Newbury Blues. And I saw, when I was heading into the ground, probably an hour and a half or so before kickoff, guys walking down Denmark Road in their Newbury kit. And yeah, they were everywhere. So that's great. But there were also a lot of people that were in like Barbar's kit or just another rugby kit. And I got the feeling that there was probably getting on for 1,000 people that weren't Gloucester supporters there.
Or even better, because that means we're ripping off other people.
Yeah.
That's ideal.
Yeah. Well, no, and that's what you want, isn't it? But if you get, and it made me think, actually, with I was like, bloody hell, these kids from Newbury, that's a good hour and a half they've travelled to.
That's our catchment area now, though. They don't have a club.
Well, exactly. With Irish going, I was like, shit, we are now,
Worcester and Irish, that's a big fucking catchment area that we've now got access to.
Well, yeah, and actually, we need to tap into it, really. So I don't know if it's them contacting the club or the club sort of community department reaching out that little bit further and maybe offering some good deals to those clubs. But absolutely, if you can get, if you can get 30, 40 kids and say, you're all coming down to King's Home to watch Barbarians. Mum and Dad, if you want to come too, it's, 30 quid to stand in the shed. Brilliant. Let's do a bit more of that because it's good. I'm sorry. I'm just watching. Oh, there we go. The scrum half for Tonga is probably going to get a bunker yellow.
Oh, he was low. He was on his knees.
Yeah, he was on his knees.
Oh, yeah, I've just seen it there. Yeah, you can't do that.
That's the mitigation, is it? He's on his knees, I think.
He's on his knees. Yeah. Yeah, so overall, it was a good day. I enjoyed myself. It's just I kind of felt it was a missed opportunity on a few air levels where slightly better promotion, slightly better logistics around the
disappointed by the Barbarians not promoting it on their Twitter feed. And like, you go on their website and it's not even in their fixtures. They had Munster in their fixtures. They had other games not in their fixtures. So it's like really, really weird. Obviously, this game's been booked for ages. You could click to buy tickets through their website. So that's something that I think is really, really bad, that you should have been able to, you know, it should have been advertised as a fixture, and then the buy tickets should have just then directed you to Gloucester's ticket sales. And I think that's a real shame, that and something that Gloucester probably should have a bit of a moan at, to be honest. And yeah, there was a little bit of a missed opportunity on a couple of occasions there.
Yeah. Right, we will pause, and then we're going to just chat generally about rugby, the World Cup, Jersey, and other nonsense that's around the game.
This is Jamal Ford Robinson, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast. What's that?
Right. So let's just talk about the World Cup. Snow, I love the fact that when we were in Lille, the first actual rugby you saw of this year's World Cup was the Friday night on the television.
Yeah.
It'd been going on for 2 weeks. So I'll just get, obviously, let's talk about the England game when
that
we were
sounds
over there.
That sounds bad, but I was in the US.
Had other things on, but yeah, it was just the fact that obviously you hadn't seen a lot of rugby.
Whereas for me and Ed, the first game we missed was because we were in Highbury.
So when we were in Lille, we'll just talk about the England game. It's so difficult to have any sort of judgment about a game when you're playing someone as poor as Chile.
And I was really cheering for Chile, giving it everything for a good hour.
Getting
some funny looks.
Yeah, from me mainly. I'm like, shut up. But I thought, just from your point, Snowy, what were your thoughts generally about sort of, and I'm looking forward to this because I know you've got some opinions on this, the organisation, the facilities, and the general World Cup experience that first weekend?
Yeah, the trouble is the French can't organise a piss up in the vineyard, can they? So you've got these big, very nice modern, well, very nice if that's your cup of tea, modern stadiums that are out of a town in a singular direction, so that everybody goes to those stadiums from the same place. And then getting there is okay because people are getting there at all times of the day, but getting back is an absolute shit show. And we had, whether that is consistent across the whole of France, I don't know, but we had exactly the same when we were in Lyon a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And I know that's still the case in Lyon for people who have been going for the games this World Cup.
Yeah,
and we had it in Lille, and it's not a new stadium in Lyon, new experience for them. I was chatting to one of my mates who went there for the Euros, and he had the same thing, was waiting for hours after to try and get onto a train back in. And it just takes away from the experience a bit, especially if you've had a few beers and you're desperate for a piss and you're in a queue 2 hours to get on a train. So that was a bit annoying. And there's really no way around it. I hate stadiums that are just out in the middle of an industrial area anyway, but it's like there's no opportunity to go for a bit of food or go for a drink after and spread it out.
And that's what the Metro needed. The Metro needed there to be another game on and a load of bars and pubs nearby, or just the bars still to be open and showing it, so that people could say, oh, do you know what? It's going to be really busy. Let's hang around here for 2 hours, watch the next game.
The organisation of getting people onto the chance was as good as it can be. It's just a badly thought out system. Anyway, apart from that, there's only one beer in the stadium, and it's an okay beer out of a bottle when it's ice hot cold, but out of old rubber taps, oh, it was absolute piss water. So that was rank.
Yeah.
Someone bought me a second, I would have been happy with just the one, to be honest.
Sorry.
So the beer, we should score these things, shouldn't we? So like the stadium itself, I'd give a 6 out of 10.
Oh, that's harsh. I thought the stadium was fantastic.
It's modern. It looks like any other modern stadium.
It's very concrete.
It's got an annoying tier of hospitality. I hate that.
Yeah, fair enough.
You have an expensive tier, a tier of hospitality, and then the cheap tier, which is now further away because of the hospitality tier. And Lyon was much better than that.
Mm.
But it gets bone. It keeps some points because it doesn't have a running track around it at least. So
yeah,
give it that.
True. I say 7 out of 10 for the stadium just because I do think. So I've been to a lot of these modern stadiums, we're watching football and stuff, and I felt it had a bit of character, which a lot of them don't.
It was a round concrete thing.
No, yeah, but honestly, when you compare it to other round concrete things, it had a bit of character, believe me.
I'm not sure that's worth a point.
half a point, maybe. I thought it was all right. But yeah, I take your points about, I don't like the middle tier. That annoys the hell out of me, but I suppose that's how they make money.
So the beer gets one at, well, I don't know. I'm trying to think, do I give it one? Because that would suggest nothing could be worse. I'll give it a 2 out of 10 because it could be like a Mormon stadium where they don't serve alcohol or something. That would be worse. So it gets 2 out of 10.
Yeah.
For the beer. Transport gets a 3 out of 10.
Well, because it was all right getting there.
They organised it quite well, getting people on. It was just, maybe three.
What
harsh.
About your turnstiles and staff?
Now, yeah, so the access to the stadium, considering they're quite strict on security checks, I'll give them a 7 because actually the digital access was very quick and efficient.
Yeah, it was actually.
The game, I'll give a 4 as well.
Yeah.
There was a game of rugby. That's about as much as I can say about it. There were lots of tries scored. Yeah. So all in all, it's probably the worst bit of the whole weekend, the game.
Well, it's often the way though. I mean, to be fair, I think if we'd been able to secure tickets as per the original plan for the Argentina or Japan game, I'm not saying that the games would have been any better, but the fact that they were bigger games and there was more, I felt, you know, something's riding on it and there's a bit more of a tension around it. That might have been a more enjoyable part, but yeah.
The best part of the weekend, the highlight for me was, it was Lawrence's round and me and Jim ordered a triple.
Oh yeah.
Nice little Belgian triple, but they poured it in pint glasses and it cost them about 40 quid for the round.
Yeah, and then Jim decided it'd be a clever idea to spill half of it all over a girl on crutches.
Oh yeah, then Jim emptied his.
Yeah, it was possibly the most dodgy table that I've ever sat at in my life. There was more gap than there was table, but you know, I do. Yeah, it was my fault.
Well, to be fair though, what was quite funny, that Saturday night. We were on this I don't know if it was the main strip. It was certainly one of the more popular areas of Lille.
Yeah,
and there was all the bars open, hundreds of people in the street, you know, enjoying themselves. But I think Snowy and I kind of touched on it at the time. There was this sort of tension in the air where we were making the point. There's a lot of lads from Essex and Kent who hadn't probably seen a beer before, let alone a Belgian beer, was struggling somewhat, and it did feel a little bit like Chippy Lane in Cardiff for those who know it, and there's that sort of slight undercurrent of menace, and I thought the slightest spark here, it's only going to take.
But it was all rugby lads, but they weren't maybe like normal if you go and watch Harlequins a lot, but other than that they weren't your normal.
There was a lot of Londoners that jumped on the Eurostar, wasn't there?
I know what you mean. It was rugby. It was definitely a rugby crowd, but there were also quite a few football fans mixed in. And I don't know. It felt, as I was saying, it felt like there was that like slight tension, and the spark could just ignite it. And then, of course, Jim throws a pint all over just a girl in crutches, and I'm thinking, oh, we're the spark. Good. But luckily, it was diffused very quickly, and we had a chat.
Oh well, you're very good at your French, aren't you?
Well, I try. I try to be charming and
Thing is, I think what probably did it is I'd already got her a chair.
That's true.
When she first arrived, I went, oh, would you like a chair? And I got her a chair so she could have a sit down. And then I threw a pint over her.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't a pint. It was a couple of drips.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. But yeah, I think. I mean, you know, I think we. I thought we were all quite surprised by Lille. I think it was a little bit nicer than possibly we were expecting. I don't know.
It was nicer than my last visit for sure. When I went 5 years ago, I went to that same strip, and it was rougher. it was definitely rougher, and there was a lot of the sort of newer bars. The bar where we saw Bill, that was cracking. So, yeah, I think they've definitely upped it a bit.
Yeah,
it's a good beer places being on the so close to Belgium, and then nice enough little town to have a walk around. I think you see everything in a day though, don't you?
Yeah, hence why we're trying to sort of maybe nip to Bruges for the Friday. When we're there later this week. Actually, Jim mentioned a really good point. We did see Bill Sweeney, which is the weirdest thing, because he was definitely trying to be incognito.
And Ed chased him.
Little did he expect...
screaming fangirl.
The second best rugby union podcast in the world to spot him.
No, exactly. He never thought that would happen. We did try and get him on the pod. Apparently he had a meeting. 3 hours before
he was in proper stealth mode as well. He had a proper England supporters like fleece or hoodie or whatever it was on. Didn't have a blazer, none of that. He was not wanting to be looking like he had anything to do with the RFU,
which leads us on pretty well nicely to the latest chaos and cock up at the RFU. Although I would say this isn't entirely on the RFU. So this is basically this. What was it, Thursday? Thursday or Friday? Jersey announced that they were pretty much going into insolvency with immediate effect. This is the club that last year won the championship. It sounds like for at least the last 8 months, the Jersey government has basically been propping it up, full stop. And they're now blaming the RFU because the RFU have said that, you know, because they're saying the RFU haven't given any clear indication of what the funding model is going to be, what the league system is going to be. The RFU have said to Jersey, well, you didn't tell us you were in trouble. You didn't tell us anything like this. Fundamentally, though, we've got 40 odd players who now are out of a job. And another side has gone to the wayside. So
they I do remember reading they did something to make sure that the amateur side is safe. Is that right?
Yes. Same as Irish, same as Wasps,
yeah,
same as Worcester.
So they've kind of, so Jersey RFC are not going to be plunged into huge debt and are in a position to continue, which is at least one thing.
Yeah. So do you, I mean, I don't know how much of you've sort of seen of what's going on with this, but do you have any sort of takes on what the RFU could do, whether think do we blame them or do we say, look, it's an individual thing at Jersey, they've cocked up again?
The only thing I seem to notice with these is that it seems to be completely in the club's hands. Like there must be warning signs a long way out that a club is struggling financially and they're trying different things and they're getting to a point where they then have to go bust. And it seems like when that happens, it's like a surprise for everyone, including the RFU.
Yeah.
So now, there's lots of questions about the state of the RFU's finances because apparently they've lost a lot of money in recent years, whereas before we're by far the richest rugby country in the world. But it feels like we should have enough people being the biggest rugby nation in the world, which we still are, with the most number of registered players and the biggest infrastructure and everything, that we can identify when these clubs are struggling early on and get people in to stop that situation happening. But I don't think the RFU are fussed. I think they almost see it as like a natural phase where clubs that haven't set themselves up properly to succeed are going to go bust and we'll be left with like a refresh. But the trouble is, I think we're seeing throughout the game globally, we're certainly seeing it internationally, and I think we're seeing it at clubs as well, is that we're getting this separation of the few rich clubs.
Yeah.
And the poorer clubs are getting poorer, rich getting richer, poor getting poorer. And we're just going to end up with this limited number of elite, wealthy clubs, which no doubt will end up in some sort of super league or something. And the rest of the clubs are just going to be playing amateur rugby from 20 years ago. Yeah, so I think the ring fencing of the Premiership is going to come, and that's going to contribute towards that as well. We've discussed that at length on the podcast before. And yeah, in an ideal world, you have a really strong Premiership.
Yep.
And as it gets stronger, the lower leagues get stronger, and they promote and relegate and everything. And you get to a state like football is very slowly progressing to the state that League Two football has pretty good crowds. We've even got, you know, League One football where people are aware of the clubs, or there's big clubs that used to be in. And you get the odd club that screws up financially and ends up going right the way down. But generally, it's getting deeper and deeper. And yeah. And whilst there were lots of financial fair play issues and everything years ago, it's pretty secure considering everything that's happened with COVID and everything as well in football.
Yeah, I think that's a good one, actually, because football, I think people are more and more going to watch their local team rather than travelling further to see a Premier League team. And that might be a financial thing. So they still love football, but it's a lot cheaper to go and watch their local second division team play rather than, you know, and they can do that, get a season ticket and go every week rather than have a big trip on occasion to go and see that Premier League team that they probably still support. But I've seen it, you know, I've got mates that go to watch Gloucester City, and that didn't used to happen a couple of years ago. So I think it's,
yeah, and I think
it's definitely a good model.
At one point, Premiership rugby is probably akin to Championship football in terms of crowd sizes and how much attention it was getting there. But now I think we're more in line with League One football. So it's quite a dire situation. I've kind of gone off topic there a bit, but what do you do about jerseys specifically? I think we haven't set up a structure to look after the country having a lot of clubs that are trying to get better and trying to get bigger. I think we're just focusing on the top 10 clubs and we don't really care about anything else.
No, it to me, it's always been this. The biggest issue is that every other country, to a point, decided right at the beginning of professionalism that the country comes first. There are exceptions. France would be another exception, but they are saying, look, the country comes first. We want our national side to be the best it possibly can be. That has actually, I think, in some instances, been a detriment to itself. So Wales, for example, had a thriving club system, but didn't have enough money to sustain all of those clubs. And I think probably what's happened is for example, for them, they've gone down a route of a regional system, which no one really bought into because there was no history behind it. And Wales have found themselves in this really weird position where the international team is now, it's almost a club in itself. And regional sides are struggling. Ireland, however...
Wales now, if they could, they would go back to just having the club size they had originally and never have made any of those changes.
So no, and but they would be, and it would be a set 10. They would be, you know, 8 or 10 clubs or whatever, and then they would basically have those clubs and that'd be it. They wouldn't be promotional.
No, I don't think so. No, because I think that's a halfway to that. They just went a bit further with the regions, which is what we'll probably end up with in the UK as well. But when you split that off, you're doing exactly the same thing. It's just the half measure towards it.
I mean, Ireland were a different one because Ireland have always had that regional
system. Ireland. Yeah, so that's just their natural structure.
Yeah, they didn't have a club network in the same to the same strength. You wouldn't have played Gary Owen or you know Limerick or whoever. No. You know, you would only have ever played the representational size like Connacht or Munster or Limerick or whatever, but Munster or Leinster. But again, straight away the arguments came back and it's like the same old arguments again and again and again around, oh, you know, this is why promotion and relegation should be brought back because it means that the clubs would have had something to go for or there would have been no, because
Jersey would have gone, oh fuck, we've got to spend an absolute shit ton of money to get better players so that we don't get absolutely annihilated every week. And we've still only got a 3,000 capacity stadium, so we're never going to make any money.
So Ealing, the problem, of course, has happened is we've got Jersey, which won the championship last year, and you've got Ealing. They're really the only two sides who arguably last season could have got promoted. Now, Ealing have gone all out to make a point, really, on the cup. They've fielded pretty much their strongest sides in every single round. They've got wins against Northampton and who else is in that group? Bath, maybe. Well, they've got Bath next week. But they've gone out and they've made a real point to go hard. They're in the semi-final. They've already qualified for the semi-final. And I know what's going to happen. So Ealing will probably play a team who, in the semi-final, who aren't going to take it as seriously as they do. They might win. They might get through to the final. And all the people will be coming out of the woodwork going, see, this is why Ealing should be promoted. Forgetting that if any time Ealing played a full Premiership 15 team, they'll get absolutely smashed. And this is the problem. It's like, yeah, well,
There's lots of contributing factors to that, though. Like, one of them is the fact that we've ring-fenced all the English players. Like, if we just opened that up to natural market economics, as we should have done, I think, although I'm a bit torn on that one, then the standard of the league drops. That's kind of the point, is that some of the talent filters out. But that doesn't mean that the quality of what you're watching is worse, because arguably the international side is better because they're selecting best players playing for the best teams, wherever those teams are.
Yep.
But because the average standard of the Premiership is a bit lower, that means that the Championship teams are a bit more competitive, and it means that the Premiership clubs are having to pick younger players and they're having to spread that budget in a different way. And I think anything that, it's a bit like an economic philosophy, but I think anything that kind of tries to control the way it all works ends up coming back to bite you on the ass. And it's better not having any sort of constraints in place.
No, I suppose the only thing I would say is that you've got to have, I don't know, do we agree that there has to be a minimum standard in terms of stadia, and you want to have the clubs to have at least, they can at least wash their face. So, but France have got a system where if you don't post a profit, isn't it, something like that, you've got to basically show you've got funding that posts a profit that you can stay in the league. So I don't know who it was.
So definitely financial fair play should definitely be the rules.
Yeah.
Stadium, yes, there has to be some standards. We can't have people just stood around a pitch in Merthyr Tydfil or whatever in the top division. but I think the standards have been set way too high, because when those standards were set, there were loads of Premiership teams that weren't good enough standard. And then you've got, and they need to be thinking about the bigger picture, like, right, which are the clubs that are going to have catchment areas? They're in areas where the football's not so big, or they're in areas where, for the size of the area, the football teams aren't so strong, and there's the potential to have long-term success. Like, before Exeter came up, a couple of years before they got good in the Championship, no one would have ever said Exeter would have been suitable to come up to the Premiership. And they've been very sustainable there. So, like, the one that has always jumped out to me is, like, Cornish Pirates. There is no top-level sport in that part of the country at all. And there's enough people there to sustain, 10,000 week in, week out crowds.
But there isn't a stadium to host them. That's the problem.
Well, yeah, but they've had lots of plans for stadiums that have been rejected, or they couldn't quite get the money together. Or, I mean, far, far better than teams that, where it's really not sustainable, like London Irish or Ealing, or these ones that are sharing with football teams, where they're then at the mercy of the football team. Like, the pitch gets cut up one winter, the fans kick off, and then that's it, they're fucked.
Yeah, well, interesting on the talking about stadiums, we noticed that Bath have put in their plans for their updated and upgraded rec. And yeah,
it looks crap
because you're still going to get wet if you're on the one side. It's better than the horrible Roman thing that somebody designed. I don't know if you saw that, Snow.
I thought that was better.
No. The Roman thing was... Well, actually, the only thing that would have been better was that would have just pissed off a lot of people, because quite rightly, all the people in Bath were like, yeah, I know we're a Roman city, but we're famous for our Georgian architecture. So plunking a fake Colosseum in here isn't necessarily in keeping with the aesthetic.
But now they've gone for some sort of super modern bronze thing that really doesn't fit with anything.
No, I know. Yeah, I mean,
I don't know, but it is funny. Yeah,
it is funny. And then in terms of the Pirates, etc. I mean, I would love to see. I genuinely would love to see a strong, competitive Championship in which you could you know, if, for example, God forbid it ever happened, Gloucester had a hot, absolutely shocking season, ended up finishing bottom and getting relegated.
What?
I know. But if that ever happened, it's not the Armageddon that it could be, because there's a competitive championship below in which, you know, if you have a one or two seasons down there, it's not the end of the world, because you know you can build back up and come back up again. I don't think that's really going to happen.
It's too late. It's too late now, because the Premiership, the quality of the Premiership product isn't good enough. And when I say that, I mean, the games are entertaining enough, as entertaining as they've ever been, and they're still relatively close amongst the league. But the crowds are worse.
Hmm.
You're not consistently seeing sold out crowds at any stadium.
The Bath, funny enough, Bath are the only ones, really. Bath are the only ground that have consistent sellouts. I think they ended up with like 97% capacity last year. Yeah, but because they've got a small ground, really. It's only, what, 11 and a bit thousand. They're a very big club, you know, despite me wanting to say they are a big club. They've got a big catchment area. They've got a lot of history. They have a lot of fans. You know, they've got, I think they're one of the very few that pretty much sell out their season tickets.
I mean, I think Gloucester are a good yardstick for it, because, you know, God, how many years, 10 years ago, more, we were at a point where we were getting up, the stadium could hold more in those days, and we were getting 16,800 after the new stand was built, maximum capacity. We're like, we're growing far too fast for the stadium, and there were plans about everywhere for what a new stadium could look like, moving. Yeah. We can't cope with the growth of the club. And now we very consistently hit 12,000-13,000. And we don't feel like we need to be expanding anything.
No,
okay, the product of the rugby has been pretty shit for a long time, but
that's the thing, isn't it? It's the product of the rugby. What we need is people that come and they pay their money to enjoy themselves. And actually, that's the key thing, isn't it? It's all about having a good day out. And if it's a day out, or if it's a couple of hours out, or whatever it is, it's about getting value from that. And I think, because of the cost of living, you know, crisis that the vast majority of people are living in, it's that, how much value am I getting for my 2 hours of rugby? Do I want to continue with that? Do I want to take my family to that? Do I want to spend my money elsewhere? And I still go. I still got my season ticket. You know, I bought a load of tickets the other day, because it's my son's birthday next week, and we're taking a load of his mates to one of the games. It's pretty bloody expensive, to be fair. And you know, and it's not. Well, to be fair, all his mates are mates that he plays rugby with, so they're all kind of keen. But it changes the dynamic quite a lot, just because of the cost. And I think there's a lot of families that maybe, you know, it might be, you know, mum, or it might be dad, that are the diehard, and the rest of the family have gone. And maybe a lot of that number that's dropped with the attendances is because actually it's only that diehard parent that still goes.
Yeah.
And the rest of the family stay at home and do other stuff, because...
Yeah, I think if you've got a season to go, it's a sunk cost, isn't it? And if you're a bit tight halfway through the season, you can go down, not have a drink, and it hasn't really cost you anything. But you can't go to quite a few games now.
No.
It's just not feasible. It just costs you an absolute fortune. So the people that are... non-season ticket holders that go are picking one or two games a year and making a big day of it.
Yeah, exactly. The other
I was just gonna say, but back to that bigger picture, I think the whole of the Premiership and the Championship and the RFU and their responsibilities, it's just, at the minute, we shouldn't be looking at any big changes. We should be looking at, like, what can we do to hunker down and see out a few years where we're not losing any more clubs. We let the economy sort itself out, and we say, right, then what's the vision for growing Premiership rugby going forward? But I think
vision 2030. Where do we want to be?
Yeah,
in 2030, do we want to have any more clubs? Do we want to have any less clubs?
Yeah,
there seems to have been. I mean, you talked about like the RFU vision. I think it's kind of been mirrored a little bit by the GRFU, and you know, we've seen it a lot with local clubs really struggling, and And I see Long Levens are now putting out a third team. They did this weekend. So it's kind of the model that the Gloucestershire RFU kind of wanted maybe as long as 10 years ago, which was the likes of Doughty, our team, to not really exist because it's awkward because they wanted less clubs, but all those clubs to have a first, seconds and a thirds, because then it kind of, it just works better in a lot of ways, because if you are putting out three teams regularly, when you do have a bit of an issue, you're still putting out your first and your seconds, and it's only your thirds that fall away. And there seemed to be a definite push to sort of do away with the one team or the one squad teams, and kind of let them, and they were more than happy for them to fall to the wayside, which I'm not aware of a huge amount of clubs in Gloucestershire that have kind of gone to the sword, thankfully. But I know, just because of friends that are still playing, there's a lot of teams that are still struggling to get players. I think there's a lot of those youngsters aren't sticking with rugby when they get to adult.
I mean, the element of that, the other aspect of that, and I know this from speaking to some lads who were part of academies, not necessarily Gloucester, but certainly Worcester, is that they, where previously they would have been playing for these local clubs, they get snapped up by the Premiership Academy clubs, and that's it then. And you get to the age of 17, 18, 19, etc. And then you're like, yeah, thanks, but you're not good enough. I can imagine, I know for a fact is how it works in football, a lot of lads at that point just go, you know what? I'm done. I don't need that. You know, it's an emotional cost to them. They don't want to do rugby anymore. And these are talented guys who would have a huge impact in local rugby. They don't have that willingness to continue. Just a couple of asides before we finish, and it was just some things I noticed yesterday. I don't know if you picked up on this, Jim. First of all, Sam Roberts was doing the comparing on the pitch once he got the mic to work. Which was nice. It's good to see Sam at the ground. Unfortunately, the mic kept not working. But the tannoy system was superb yesterday. Really good, very clear. How was it in the shed?
I can't say I noticed it being better than normal.
Okay.
To be honest. I didn't actually have anything to drink yesterday in the shed. Yeah, so maybe my head should have been better than normal too. I did notice that the person that was doing the screen was really good at giving out spoiler alerts.
Yes. they kept announcing. Yeah.
So it's like, funny. So our next legend is, well, it's the person that you showed on the screen about 3 seconds ago. We all know it's Charlie Sharples. Yay.
Yeah.
And it's like, he probably could have done a little bit better. I don't know. Here's an idea. Maybe go 11, 12, 13. Not 12, 13, 11, but...
yeah. It was... so that was... The other thing, I noticed it a couple of weeks ago at the Nottingham game, and it definitely was it there again yesterday, which was music during breaks in play. Now, I'm not one for... I couldn't care less, really. It's just...
It wasn't very loud. It was almost like they were trying to get away with it.
Yes, and I'll be honest... I wonder whether they'll try it at the Quinns game, because it's just, you don't need it. I don't think it adds anything to an atmosphere or anything to a ground. It's just noise.
Was it as well? It was, I'm trying to remember what it was now.
Well, they had various songs. There were various songs being played.
But it was kind of just classic pop.
Yeah, it's just
pointless.
Generic dance music, pop music. The best bit for me, though, and Snow, you're going to love this, mate. Right. So when Gloucester ran out in the second half, they ran out to All of the Lights by Kanye West featuring Rihanna. However, whoever chose that track forgot to choose the radio edit. So,
oh,
yeah.
I didn't notice this.
Yeah. So the first line is MJ gone, that, can't use that word, dead. It was very, very audible.
I don't know the song. Can you repeat without a bleep?
I can certainly try. So it was MJ gone, that N-word dead.
Hasn't Kanye been cancelled as well?
Probably. I mean, at this point, it just like, lads, there are multiple ways. You don't even have to, like, there are non-lyric. There's like just the instrumental bit of that song. You don't have to have the actual words. And
so are you saying that the PA system dropped the N-bomb?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
That's probably not ideal.
No, not ideal. Which did make me chuckle because
I didn't even notice. Which shows how much I care about music at Kingzone.
Yeah, well, it's true. So it was just the fact that I wasn't really paying attention. Again, music comes on, players run out, and I'm like, that was the proper version. You can't use that word. We are away again from Thursday all the way through to Monday. So I would imagine we probably won't be recording a pod next week, but what we'll try and do, as I said, I will try and get some further audio from our lovely weekend away in Lille next weekend and splice that together into some sort of chaotic, hopefully non-libelous audio. And then we'll be back properly for the Quins game, which is only 2 weeks away now, isn't it? Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, proper.
It's going to come round quick.
In the meantime, I'll see you guys Thursday. Have a nice evening. Have a nice rest of the week. And speak soon.
Yeah, best of luck to all the Gloucester ladies that are going out to New Zealand for the World 15 thingy watch it that they're doing.
Yes. The which I didn't completely understand what that is, by the way. Because it's not a World Cup, but it's got all the.
No, it's like a World. Well, it's potentially how World Cups could be. It's like a 1-2-3, isn't it? So you've got Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3, and they all play in their own little tournaments.
Mm.
But yeah, should be fun. Don't know how much of it's televised, but.
Based on everything else, nothing probably, but there we go.
Yeah.
Right. Cheers, guys.
Yeah. Cheers.
Bye bye.